Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Adrenaline in my soul, every thought out of control. It's VGC, the video game podcast, with me, Jordan Midler, and Chris Scullion. This week, Ronins are rising and we're alone in the dark. But first, Chris, what did you get for Asda?
Funny you should ask, Jordan. I'm going to drop a surprise double review on
you. Oh, here we go.
A double live review.
Can one of those Twitter accounts with like 200,000 followers that always clips up MGF Grub, can you get ready for this? Because this is going to be your next one.
Here it comes. So today, live on the VGC podcast, I am reviewing limited edition raspberry ripple flavor,
yes.
I Brew Extra, and wild berry slush.
Wow.
I Brew Extra. Now, I have not tried either of these. I literally got back from Asda. I'm sure other convenience stores are supplying it. For those not aware, I'm very much an Iron Brew man.
Yep.
But the flavors, I kind of. I'm hot and cold on them. The fiery Iron Brew from a number of years ago was the best, in my opinion.
That was nice. Really burned your throat, but the fucking about the old cinnamon right in there.
Makes you feel alive. Makes you feel like a man.
Yeah.
Reminds you you've got a pulse. but this kind of, I don't like when they go novelty with raspberry ripple and stuff like that. They did an ice cream one, which was honking. Someone imagine this. We'll try that first. So we're trying the raspberry ripple Iron Brew.
This is today's launch day. Chris was at Asda from 4 o'clock this morning.
I had my tent and everything.
Okay, we're going in for the first drink. He's drinking a lot of this. That's the can fucking finish now. How are we feeling?
Do you know what it tastes like? What? That's actually not bad. It tastes like drumsticks. The confectionery. That's basically drumsticks flavoured.
That is an incredible... endorsement, especially
there's no Iron Brew aftertaste. Sometimes you think they taste like something and then the Iron Brew kicks in.
Yeah,
this is drumsticks all the way down, baby.
They taste like when you were a kid and you would just mix like five different diluting juices and see how they tasted. The drumsticks, I used to, do you remember the, I can't remember the brand of drumsticks and like it's called like Sweet Treats or something stupid like that. The one that has Parma Violets, all your favourites.
Oh, yeah.
You would get a big bag of those. My dad would get
the
them.
Swizzles, the yes, Swizzles mix.
Exactly. Yeah. You would maybe get one dib dab in there, but those were like, that was a high ticket item, so you wouldn't get as many of those. As you'd get Parma Violets at your neck, but my dad would get a big bag of those on a Friday when he would do the big shop, and the drumsticks were the first to be gone.
Drumsticks and refreshers.
Oh, yeah. Refreshers, again, a high value item. You'd only get one or two of those because, I mean, refreshers are pretty serious, especially when you used to get the long ones. I know we're in Remember Opal Fruits territory here, but I guarantee that my two front teeth have been pushed forward by getting a drumstick, putting the whole thing in my mouth and anchoring my teeth to the bottom of the stick and just pulling it. So you've just got one big bit of drumstick in your mouth.
It was the Dennis the Menace. Not the Dennis the Menace, sorry, the Desperate Dan bar in my era. That was the golden ticket, the big orange slab of just pure sugar.
The Iron Brew bars, again, amazing stuff. I think we might have talked about this in the podcast or in one of the 500 podcasts I do every week, but when approached by Bar about remaking the Iron Brew bars, apparently... they have lost their original recipe and they no longer have the license from whoever the
Cowans, I think.
Yeah,
it was,
the company that made them. It's just, so I think you can still get like Iron Brew flavored bar, but it's just it's generic, it's crap.
It's when they spell it IRONBREW, like Iron Brew, the fake stuff. Well, I'm going to quickly go for the wild berry slush as well. I'm like, I believe in Canada, according to my wife, they call this double fisting. I'm not sure if that's a term here.
Canadians love the double fist.
They love it. They love it. So This is the wild berry slush, nice crack. I'm experienced.
He's going for it again. The wild berry slush, when in like a dark, kind of dark fruits coloured can. How are we feeling about it?
That's not as impressive.
No.
It tastes like... I'll try again.
Oh, he's going for more.
Taking this very seriously. It tastes like something, but I can't think what. Some other kind of berry type drink, but I can't really think of anything. It tastes like something. I don't like it. It's got a kind of black currant-y flavour, which I'm not a massive fan of. Definitely the raspberry ripple is the winner.
If you were to rank the four of these like summer flavours, how would you feel about it?
What were the other two? Oh, like based on, as well as the ice cream and the summer fruits. What they did, I put raspberry ripple top.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a big gap because there's the other three I wasn't massively impressed by. Raspberry ripple top, big gap, summer fruits, ice cream, wild berry slush.
Okay, I think that's an official ranking. Iron Brew, if you want quotes for your cans, just reach out and we'll sort that out. They're still trying to peddle those energy drink Iron Brews. You're not seeing all four of them lined up as much, but you still see one or two, so I don't know if that's been a quiet discontinuation.
Yeah, they're poor.
I'm currently drinking a Monster Reserve white pineapple.
I like the reserve to make it sound like they've cracked out in some cask.
it's aged 300 years. Then there's a rind on top of it, but that's just part of the flavour.
It's aged 12 years like its audience.
This is a description from the can. No juice, tea, coffee, or any tweaks to the Monster Energy blend. Monster Reserve is straight up original Monster in new amazing flavours.
That's tweaked then.
Yeah. It's literally, I mean, the original Monster doesn't taste like white pineapple, so there's a tweak for you. It's the ideal combo of the right ingredients and the right proportions to get the job done like only Monster can. They describe it as intense but smooth, easy drinking, white, parentheses, sugar loaf, pineapple flavour. And this is what it's for. Athletes, musicians, anarchists. This is an Antifa drink. Students, road warriors. Ooh, what a rush!
One of them's dead. So like that.
Are they both dead?
Are they both dead now?
I don't know.
I think Animal died first, didn't he?
No, Hawk died first. Hawk's long gone. Yeah, because Animal is John Laurinaitis's brother.
That's right.
So, Animal in for years and years, Animal was still holding on to the. Oh, Road Warrior Animal died 4 years ago. He's well gone.
Was he?
Aye, 2020. Oh, okay. I think the woke COVID mind virus got him, God rest him.
Well, and Hawk's gone as well, aye.
Yeah, Hawk is long gone.
Hawk went ages ago, aye.
Yeah.
Well, God rest a pair of them.
Yeah.
There was Paul Ellering's still on the go because he was our manager for a wee while.
They'll kick my boss. I'm such an idiot. In order to find Road Warrior Hawk, I just googled Animal Hawk, and of course the results are the bird, the hawk. Oh, yeah, Paul Ellering, he's managing on television at the moment, is he not? He's the manager of that.
Is he on the other show?
I think he's... No, he's back with WWE. I think he's... managing Karrion Kross's faction.
Is he on NXT? I don't watch NXT.
I genuinely couldn't tell you, but the most important part of this video game podcast is finding out when and how Hawk died.
We apologize for those waiting for video game news. It's coming.
It's really not. This is all we're talking about this week is the Road Warriors. Mind when Heidenreich was in the Road Warriors? Anyway,
I actually refuse to call them the Road Warriors, even though that's what they're better known as. They'll always be Legion of Doom.
Such a cool look. Hawk died in 2003. Apparently,
was it barbiturates?
Don't know, but it was a heart attack. So you've got to imagine what the nose candy those lads were shoving up there during the glory days.
Certainly wasn't refreshers.
Yeah, certainly wasn't. Anyway, what were we talking about? Video games. Chris Scullion, are you ready for a professional PlayStation 5?
I'm pumped for. I'm sick of this. Amateur one of them.
Yeah.
This semi-pro PS5.
I hate this PlayStation 5 that's filmed POV with a shaky cam. I want lights and I want a steady three camera setup, you know? The rumor mill is a swirling that a PS5 Pro is coming out this year. Digital Foundry's been chatting about it, saying that it'll be able to upscale 1080p games to 4K, which is something that developers can easily add to their games with a little patch. Chris Gillian, what's the point of this?
What was the point in the last one? It's just to kind of to get the tech nerds excited about something.
Enthusiasts.
Sorry, that's what I meant. Sorry, I forgot to consult my thesaurus. Get them excited for something mid-generation, so that they don't have a Switch situation where people go, "Oh, the Switch is aging hardware now." Not that it's a weird this PS5 one because it's only kind of fairly recently stock has been readily available,
yeah.
And already it's becoming slightly obsolete. And they're saying, "Oh, okay, now we'll move on to the PS5 Pro." I'll still get it because I'm like a nerd for this kind of stuff, but it feels less needed than in previous generations, I would say.
Yeah, especially considering like when the PS4 came out, that was already dated hardware, so you kind of needed to get to a Pro for a new generation. But like,
yeah.
PS5 is still running hot stuff. There's obviously disparity. So Dragon's Dogma 2 out this week, by the way, point of order. There's a review cast you can go and listen to with me, Alex Arnoldson, and Jade King. But that game is very intense and like barely hits 30 in some places on PS5. Mm. And a few reviews, it's like there's no PC on the market that can make it hit 60 all the time. So there is a bit of disparity, but games can still look amazing on PS5 and Xbox Series. So if this comes out this November, let's say, that'll be 4 years since the launch of the PlayStation 5. The PlayStation 4 Pro came out 3 years after the launch of the PlayStation 4. So is the feeling that it's too soon just because the generation was so weird with COVID?
I think so. I think that's why, because yeah, like you say, when you look at the calendar dates, it makes sense for it to be appearing now. But it's still, I don't know if other people feel the same way, but to me, it still feels like the start of the generation, which is weird because it blatantly isn't. I don't know if it's that or also because we haven't had a hell of a lot of big first-party games from either side, especially from Xbox, but certainly from Sony as well. The number of big first-party releases you could still probably count on one or two hands. It's not certainly not the rate they came out on PS3 and even the rate they came out on PS4, partly because games are, as we all know, are getting more expensive and take longer to make. It does kind of feel like we're still in the early stages of this console, even though we're actually not. It's a strange one. I don't know. I'll tell you what I'm still waiting for.
Oh.
Every now and then I look at my empty PlayStation 5 box and see a little logo in the corner that says 8K. So I'm still wondering when that patch is coming, but to play 8K games.
I wonder, I'm going to Google this now. PS5 games that run 8K, any of them?
I made the mistake of saying that on Twitter once, and I obviously got all the Defense Force coming out saying, I think you'll find that it just means that it supports an 8K output, not that it actually renders games at 8K. That also what?
Do you know one game does render at 8K? If you're interested, The Tourist. That renders at 8K.
Does it? So that justifies putting an 8K on the box.
I would say so. 8K 60 frames a second. You've got to love it. But yeah, the 8K thing's hilarious. But for people listening to this and wondering, like, what am I expecting to pay for this? £600 is my prediction.
Yeah. At the very least, five. It's the £556, I would say. Yeah, I think you're right.
How much is the get in the door cost for a PS5 these days? Let me check.
So 400s, high fours. Well, you mean like the basic without the
trial? Yeah, for the digital, with no bells and whistles, you can get one for £3,899. That's the in the door cost. So that's why I think they'll go 600 for a Pro.
Yeah. Although they're cheeky bastards in that there's still only a 1 terabyte hard drive in it. I said, like, come on. And so I hope they'll let you take out the SSD from the PS5 and slot it into the PS5 Pro without any kind of reformatting or shenanigans going on.
That would be great, because it's very easy to swap your SSD on the PS5. But those drives are still pretty expensive. Like if you're wanting a PS5 Pro that's £600 and then an extra couple of terabytes, that's another £200. Like, it's a lot of money. Obviously, we're in the weird position where, like, there's a bit of, not an obligation, but we need to know what's going on. We need to be out there on the front lines. And it's very likely, like, we'll get one for review or whatever. But I don't know what they could pair with this to make it worth it, unless it doesn't come this year and they drive a boatload of money up to Rockstar and say, we don't want any exclusive, we're not trying to get any exclusive content, maybe GTA Online stuff, but we want the PS5 Pro boxes to be covered in GTA 6.
Mm. Yeah,
I think that could do it.
It's a weird one. Maybe they could just bundle some of those unsold PlayStation VR 2s in with it.
For a cool $2,000.
Then you've got the future of virtual reality. Yeah, it's going to be a tough sell, but at the same time, I don't think it's going to be like the I need to check my numbers, but I don't think the PS4 Pro was like the best selling version of the PS4. Like, I think most quote unquote normal players will be happy to just buy the stock version. This is more just for the graphics fiends who absolutely desperately need the very best. It's not like a jump to a PS6. That's the kind of the one where most people, I think, will hold fire. I think if you're happy enough with your PS5, and you're worried about the Pro coming out and being too expensive, just stick with your PS5. All the games that come out between now and then are still going to work on it.
Yeah.
All the games after it are still going to work on it until the PS6 comes out, because nobody's stupid enough to kind of cut the user base and make a game that only really works on a PS5 Pro. That'd be ridiculous. So don't worry too much if you're listening to this and going, I don't want a PS5 Pro. Just stick with what you've got, I would say.
Looking it up now, apparently the ratio was 7-1, as in 7 normal PS5s. Yeah. PS4 sold for every 1 Pro. So
okay, there you go. That's more than I thought. Yeah. There you go. Just for the people watching on video, I've literally just noticed the reflection of a doll in my TV screen, which is quite creepy.
The highly deformed doll that you put the picture of the Slack in?
Oh no, this is fully featured.
Okay,
it's got all the bits, but yeah, it's fun times. The other doll was like had a working rectum, in which you feed it food, and then like pellets come out, like formed like feces. It's very realistic. The daughter loves it. I'm not a fan.
Why? I mean, let's not get into it, but that I've never understood why that was a genre of toy that was, I mean, that stuff was kicking a ball when I was a child and it was being advertised on Nickelodeon and all that crap.
It's a weird one. I think, I mean, I could tell now that I've had a daughter, she loves the whole kind of nurture side of things. So I get the doll side of things because she loves the idea of having like wee babies that she can take care of and stuff. Mm. It's the fascination with bodily functions that I don't get. I don't think they need to cry or shit themselves or anything like that, but and yet
who amongst us doesn't have an obsession with bodily functions? The PlayStation 5 Pro will support all bodily functions, such as the need to drink your own urine because you can't afford anything else. But
speaking of drinking piss,
speaking of drinking piss, Battlefront Classic Collection is worse than drinking piss. I cannot believe how badly this has went, especially considering on this very podcast we were like, that's so cool, I can't believe they got the rights to do this, how exciting. It has had a disastrous launch. On launch night, most of the servers were hidden, so only 192 players could play online out of 10,000 on PC. Chris, why did this go so wrong? As a representative for Aspyre,
apologise on behalf of Aspyre. It's a disaster, isn't it? Especially because that's on PC. I'm guessing it sold well on others as well, because I did a story recently on Sea of Thieves being in the top 10, being the number one on the PlayStation Store's top 10 pre-orders, and number two was Star Wars Battlefront Collection. Mm. So it's not like 20 people bought this game. There's like it's sold a decent number by the looks of it, by the sounds of it. And you know, the kind of first impression is always the kind of the lasting one for a lot of these things. So it's just an awful launch, and by all accounts, it's getting better. They're working on fixing, making those invisible servers appear again and stuff like that, but
it was just absurd stuff. It was like you saw videos of people like running through the Death Star and their characters were like pinging all over the map, and everyone was like, these matches can't end because no one can shoot anyone. Because as soon as you go to shoot someone, they're at the other side of the planet. Yeah. Like,
which does make it realistic if you're a stormtrooper, to be fair.
Yeah, true. The Battlefront franchise is so cursed. It's unbelievable. Those first two games, great. PS2 classics. The reboot was fine. It was like very bare bones. They didn't have a lot in it. I think Battlefront 2 is now a brilliant game. Like, they got there eventually, but one of the worst launches of all time.
And the amazing thing is, it's another one of these ahead of its time for the wrong reasons situations, because the stuff that was in Battlefront 2 at launch isn't massively different to some of the stuff you get in modern games with the grinding and all this kind of crap, all the kind of, especially the kind of season pass stuff and free to play stuff. It wasn't massively different. In that you don't get the heroes right away and you've got to grind for them and all this kind of stuff. But because it was at the time, it was so kind of wildly different from everything else that was out there, it got absolutely hammered, and rightly so. It's just that a lot of stuff now, it's the horse armor situation again, where when horse armor first came out, everyone absolutely demolished it, and it cost like £2 or something. And nowadays, we've reached the point where games like Multiverses have £20 skins. because it's just slowly edging forward to the point where it's like Stockholm Syndrome. I moaned about the skins on Twitter one day, like, some of these skins are £15, some are £20. People are, well, you've obviously never played a free-to-play game before. As if that, like, that's it's actually okay, mate. It's that.
Yeah, it was also indicative of how seriously Disney took Star Wars then and how lax they are now with it.
Now at Disney Care.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, back then it was, oh no, you can't have Darth Vader being in a silly costume. You can't have generations mixing together. And now it's just like, well, we fucked up the 9th film, so let's just do whatever we want all the time. It's especially weird that Battlefront 2 stopped development and then Disney released about a million characters into canon that could work in Battlefront, like the Mandalorian could be easily in that game. Like, I think they'll try it again, honestly. I think at some point...
Battlefront 3.
Yeah, I think at some point they'll try it again. But it's hard to know. Next up, Uncharted's Amy Hennig showing off her Marvel game. Amy Hennig, who was the star of Uncharted, do you remember? She killed Nathan Drake in the first one and then became the star. She started making games.
I spell her name wrong every single time, and you know why?
Why? Because
of Kurt Hennig.
Ah,
I write Amy Hennig every single time, and then have to correct it every single time. So I'm not a fan.
Little known fact about Amy Hennig: when she completes a game, she spits her chewing gum up in there and slaps it every single time.
just like Mr. Perfect.
She walks about the office and throws her towel above her head, and
oddly she's still managed by Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yeah.
which is awkward.
The ultimate, god rest him. Bobby the Brain Heenan is the patron saint of this podcast. I'm sure his estate is willing to sign off on that. But Amy Hennig, she was Naughty Dog head honcho for the first three Uncharted games. There was a power struggle. A little thing called The Last of Us came out that gave Neil Druckmann and Bruce Straley a lot of power, and subsequently Amy Hennig left. She's been floating about for a while, but now she's shown off her new Marvel game. It's called Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra. And they showed off a trailer running in Unreal 5. And Chris, you watched this just before the podcast. Give me the graphical review. You are Digital Foundry. Give me the graphical review.
I'm the John Linneman of this podcast. I think it looks good. I'd like to see in-game footage, as always, before actually getting too excited. I don't doubt it's an engine, because it's Unreal Engine 5, and like, the facial animations are incredible. But I'd like to see how that translates to actual gameplay, when obviously cutscenes, even if when they're in engine, can look better because the developers in complete control of where the camera's looking, and can zoom right in on characters and kind of put all the resources on that. So I will wait until I see how it looks in action, but it's a very good start. If it's anything like Uncharted, we don't know if, based on this trailer, we don't know if it's going to still be Uncharted style or if they're going to try something different. But if it looks like that and it plays a bit like Uncharted, it could kind of undo the Avengers ill will.
Yeah, by that, like Uncharted, you mean Captain America is going to be genocidal and kill like 500 people per level?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's interesting. So obviously, 1943, you know, in the 1940s, Chris, you know who was kicking a ball?
Was that Road Warrior?
Road Warrior Adolf? That's the podcast title. See, if I was in charge of the name Lord of the podcast.
Lord Alfred Hayes, has he not? In the 40s.
The following right, was pretty far by.
So do you think there'll be like, well, it's going to be Hydra, so there won't be any Nazi stuff in it, will there?
It'll be Nazi adjacent. It'll be vet. Well, I mean,
Nazi adjacent.
Yeah.
Swastikish.
I don't think they'll do like full on, full biffed on Nazis, but I think they will get as close as they can with all the Hydra stuff. Like, obviously,
Hydra basically is the Nazis, aren't they? There's going to be comic book fans going mental at me saying that.
No, like, you're the authority on this.
I think you'll fight Hydra and the Nazis teamed up in issue 1-8. But I've always understood it to be the case that Hydra was a metaphor for the Nazis, but I might be totally wrong there.
They often say Hail Hydra, so
exactly.
I think they're being pretty on the nose with it. I know Captain America has punched Hitler in one issue, but I don't know if that will be incorporated in this. But
fingers, maybe that'll be DLC.
It's like, remember on the Saboteur when you had to pay to see tits?
What a game. Did you see the Saboteur's back? Did you see that?
Is it?
Like last week or the week before, EA re-released a load of its old games. Like, and a lot of them was a lot of it was like the first Command and Conquer and early SimCity and stuff like that. But out of nowhere, it's like, here's the Saboteur. And like, you can play them on like modern systems and stuff. And it's like, so the Saboteur just kind of quietly came back.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. Do they have the tit pass? Because that was the problem. Because once the service for that went offline, that was their... If people don't remember, if people are too young to remember this, in the 360 generation, EA were desperate for you to not buy pre-owned games. So for your FIFAs and your Maddens, it was the online pass. You bought the game new, online was free. If you bought it pre-owned, you had to pay a tenner for it. However, Saboteur doesn't have online play. But you know what it did have? Tits. So
breasts.
If you didn't buy the game new, you had to pay £10 for tits, which is the going rate, I've heard. But is that is that included?
I'm not sure if
don't pretend you didn't find minute that you saw the story.
I'm not sure if the nip is included, but I need to look it up and see. I don't see any mention of DLC, so I would imagine it's as
double DLC. Way.
Oh, there we go. I'm not sure if it's as the Lord intended. I'll need to look a bit closer, as they say. Outlandish nudity aside, what a game that was. I love the Saboteur.
Very stylish.
It was a clever idea. I love the concept of, for those not aware of it, you played as an Irishman who, I seem to recall, didn't have a very good Irish accent.
No.
If one at all. It's set during World War II and the Nazis have taken over wherever you are. And the whole game starts in black and white. And as you kind of free certain areas, the colour kind of comes in. So by the end of the game, it's all in colour. And it's like a very clever idea.
I remember that game. I was gaslit by gaming magazines of the time about that game because they had such good screenshots. There were so many like, oh, there's the Eiffel Tower and he's like sneaking around.
Paris,
and
it was like, Paris, that's right.
Everybody's smoking a million fags. Like it's the fag ash is just absolutely everywhere. Like this is very stylish. That is a game. They'd never do it because it costs too much money. That is a game that would be treated very well by a Dead Space style remake. Like, you don't need to do loads to it. Just make it nice and polished. I would play that again. I mean, I despise Paris, but I would go to Saboteur Paris.
Well, anyone who heard my rant last week about Top Spin will know I'm not a big fan of Paris either. I really fancy Unreal Engine 5 looking noir type game could be like astonishing. I would think if in the right hands with all your ray tracing and everything.
Ray Tracing? Is that a Frenchman?
He's a guy, Raymond Tracing. He invented
graphics. Anyway, Amy Hennig's game is 2025. Do we think they're sticking to this?
Nope.
Nah,
I mean, it'll be late 2025, sure.
What, throw them up December 30th?
Exactly. Right in time for New Year. I'll be skipping the bells, skipping the Hogmanay, and be playing Marvel 1943 instead.
This Unreal Engine 5, by the way,
looks good,
pretty
it?
Bloody good. Yeah, I saw that Dune game that I went to see, Dune Awakening. That was an Unreal 5. Mm. And I pulled the PR boy aside and I was like, because, you know, if you ask a PR person, they'll tell you if it's real or not. And I said, right, come on, what's the deal? And he was like, no, that's just the game with the HUD off. You're taking the piss.
I played something recently for review that was Unreal Engine 5 and the environments looked amazing. Hold on, bear with me. It looked at the game itself was okay.
Crash, Nitro Kart.
That's the one.
The Bouncer.
I can't think what it was.
True Crime, Streets of New York.
I'm sure I'll remember it later. I played something recently that was Unreal 5 and it was visually impressive, if mechanically.
That's kind of where we're at now. Like the leaps are with the tech. Of that kind of style, it's kind of hard to explain to someone that doesn't care. But
that's the thing, and especially I've watched kind of tech demos of it working and stuff, and it's getting to the stage where it looks difficult to not make an environment look good, not to belittle the efforts of environmental artists and stuff like that. But Unreal Engine 5 gives them so much power and so many tools that it seems like although there's still an art to it and there's still a challenge to it, it seems easier than ever to give them the kind of the tools they need to make incredible looking. I think it was RoboCop.
Oh yeah, it will have been, because I saw RoboCop also and I was like, mate, this looks like a Fallout 3 remaster.
I think it was RoboCop, because it looked incredible. I need to double check, that's Unreal 5, but I think it might have been. The environments in RoboCop looked astonishing. It might have been that. It's most Unreal 5 games I've seen have incredible backgrounds, but again, that only takes you so far. The games themselves still need to be fun. Yeah, exactly.
Chris, why did you hack the Apex Legends esport event this weekend?
Mate, why does anyone hack the Apex Legends? That's a weird story, isn't it?
For those who never saw this on social media, because it was a laugh, the North American finals for Apex Legends were postponed because during a match, several different players were hacked. Hack is a catch-all term. I don't know how it actually happened. Like, it's they were hacked. Like, it makes me picture someone on a keyboard going... but they had aimbots turned on. One player could see everyone on the map. This isn't cheats that these players put on. They were, like, foisted upon them. Chris, this was so strange.
Mm. It's a weird one, especially the videos doing the rounds. There's a video of a guy, you see him playing and you see in the chat at the side, it starts saying hacked by whoever it was. And then the guy, all of a sudden, he can see the locations of everyone through the walls.
Yeah.
And he literally puts his hands up as if to say, I'm not doing this. I've been hacked. and then you see him just like quitting out and going, I love how one of his like teammates is like, can you still play? As if to say, fucking take advantage of that, mate. And he's like, yeah, but I've been hacked and I can see everyone. And then they kind of just jumped out. It's a strange one. I've never heard anything like that before, like people being hacked mid-game, like during an actual esports event.
I don't know how it even happens because, like, obviously it's a game that requires being online, so there's stuff going on, but, yeah, I mean, it's such a shame. I got to meet, like, quite a few of the Apex team when I was over at Respawn, and they're lovely, lovely people, and obviously this is the absolute nightmare scenario, because what are you meant to do? Like, you can't, as soon as one of those things happened, it completely invalidates the whole game, because there's, like the integrity of it, but... You should seek out these videos if you're listening to this, because these guys are—they just shit themselves, which you would like. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You're not playing for a Mars bar and a couple of quid. You're playing for like thousands and thousands of dollars, like tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in prize money. And if like you can see this guy's career disappear in front of his face, because he instantly thinks, "Oh no, this is going to look like I'm cheating here. This is going to look like I'm going to be shamed and." Never allowed back here through no fault of my own. It's going to look like I've tried to screw this system to try and win the game, and I'm going to look like an absolute like.
It's the worst thing you can be accused of as an esports man as being a cheat. So, yeah, it's a shame. They're going to replay it. They're going to tighten their security and stuff, but
we'll see. They're going to respawn.
They're going to respawn. They're going to fucking sack half their employees. the thing with video games, as opposed to like physical sports, there is always the chance, even if it's not a hack, the game could just mess up. Mm-hmm. Like, you could just fall through the world and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it could just crash. It could just crash. Yeah. It's a weird one.
Always stuff like that. This was a weird situation. When we come back, Chris, do you fancy a moan about Alone in the Dark?
I'd love to.
I'll have a moan about Rise of the Ronin 2. We'll see you in a moment.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back. For the avoidance of doubt, I will not be talking about Rise of the Ronin 2 that is yet to be released. I will be talking about Rise of the Ronin also in a little while. But first, Chris. Chris Scullion's Hello. Alone in the Dark.
Listen, I'm a big fan of the original Alone in the Dark. A lot of people forget about that when they talk about survival horror genre. They all say Resident Evil was the one that started it, and it wasn't. Like, Alone in the Dark predates it by a few years, and it was the first kind of first notable horror game that put polygonal characters in like pre-rendered environments and had them running about with set camera angles and stuff, and it was brilliant. This is like the third reboot. There was that Alone in the Dark, The New Nightmare on Dreamcast and stuff, and mm-hmm. then they did Alone in the Dark on the Wii and the 360, that kind of era. I flew to Italy, I think, to see that. And now they've done it. This is the kind of another attempt to reboot Alone in the Dark. And it's closest to the original than all the other ones, but still totally different. So you've got Edward Carnby and Emily, the name escapes me, Ravenscroft, I think. The characters from the first two, from the original game, they're back. And played by David Harbour and Jodie Comer. Jodie Comer decides to put an American accent on.
Is that a good one? Or is it like, okay. Hello, partner, I am from America.
It's not bad, it's decent, but it still feels out of place because it's set in New Orleans in the 20s. So there's a lot of extreme 1920s New Orleans accents. Like, I'm not even going to attempt one because it's borderline. But you get the gist. So even though she's doing an American accent, it still sticks out because it's not a New Orleans accent. It's like your generic quote unquote American accent, if such a thing exists. So her uncle's basically in this Deserto mansion, which is
Deserto.
It's called Deserto. Deserto.
As in the gaming website.
No, not Deserto. Deserto. Deserto, which is described as a home for the mentally fatigued.
Exactly.
Sign me up. Get me a double room booked. So her uncle was there and has gone missing. So she enlists the help of Edward Carnby, who is the kind of a private detective, a private dick, if you will. And the two of them drive to the Deserto house to see what's going on. And when they get there, the man's disappeared and they've got to kind of explore the mansion to figure out what's going on. It's atmospherically, it's really good. Like, the environments are quite cool. It does a really clever trick where the whole gimmick is this talisman thing, which has got wee dials on it. And when you spin it to certain numbers in certain puzzles, it brings up a kind of portal to another location, which is in some guy's mind. So you do the puzzle and you go, it looks like a docklands or something. and then you walk out the door and step into the Docklands from the mansion. You just walk in.
Oh, that's cool. Is it like seamless?
Aye, it's seamless. It's a really cool effect. But everything else about it is so buggy. I saw one review from another site, which I won't mention, but basically said we didn't encounter a single glitch at any point through it. I'm like, mate, I encountered three at one point, just in one scene, as I don't know what's going on. There's a bit where I just kind of went, I took three separate videos, captures while I was playing.
You did a hand check.
I did. Like I put my hands Apex up in the air. I'm not doing this. There's a bit where, you know, I don't want to do too many spoilers, but a bit when you're on a bridge and you press a button to kind of lower the bridge, but the bridge doesn't move, and you're like, what, WTF, as the kids say, why is the bridge not moving? You go outside and these vines have started wrapping around the bridge. That's the what's supposed to happen. But these vines were glitching like anything. They were properly flickering and like bits were flicking out and stuff. So it clearly was messed up. And you're supposed to hack these vines with your axe. So that was strike one. The vines were all over the place. Every time you hack them, they start glitching again. I was like properly terrified because, like, you know, when something glitches, it just feels really quite creepy.
Yeah.
I'm hacking these vines and they're like freaking out all over the place. And as each vine disappears, these bat things come and attack you. So you've got to shoot them out of the air. So I shot these bat things. And one of them died and landed in midair instead of landing on the ground. So just like it went, and it just thump in midair. I was like, okay, well, that's strike two. Like, what's going on here? And I finally completed it and went to leave the bridge. And as I walked off the bridge, it just froze and got stuck in the scenery. And I had to restart the save from the start again, from the start of that bridge bit. So that was strike three. I'm like, this game, mate. And there's glitches all the way through it. The performance stutters quite a lot. There's a bit near the end in this kind of snowy bit where it properly goes to like 5-6 frames a second. Like, it's really just, I don't know why, it just totally dies. My Xbox died at one point halfway through it because it overheated, even though it's not really that taxing a game. It's the first time it's ever happened to me with my Xbox. The combat's really clunky. Like, I've seen other reviews saying it's a good thing because it adds to the survival horror thing. You know, you always get this excuse that the old Resi games were the best because you move like a tank and that made it scary.
Thanks.
It's like, no.
No thanks.
Exactly. So that's a bit annoying. The enemies aren't scary. It's just, there's something about it that I'd still like. There's still a redeeming, the atmosphere is good. There's some scenes are like, there's a bit at the end with a tree, which I won't spoil, but it's hilarious. I was like, what? But just by and large, it's so disappointing because it's like this game had been delayed twice already. It was meant to come out in October and they delayed it just before October. And the reason they gave was, oh, we don't want to release in such a busy time. But this is a game that we want to stand on its own and you should take the time to appreciate it. And you're like, okay, we'll give them a pass for this one. Maybe for marketing reasons, they don't want to release it. So, okay. And then in December, so they delayed it to January. And then in December, they said, actually, we need to push it back further to March because we don't want anyone doing crunch during the festive period. You're like, well, why are you doing crunch if it was finished, if it was meant to be out in October? Like, so, i.e. the October excuse was bullshit and it just wasn't ready yet. And it's finally out in March and it's still not ready. Like,
They delayed it from a busy October to a week that includes a 10 out of 10 game, a big PlayStation game, and a big Nintendo game.
Yes, that was what they did.
Good stuff.
And it's a shame. I mean, there will be, from what I can tell on Metacritic, the scores vary from 20 to 90. So I'm sure your mileage may vary depending on your tolerance for this kind of thing. And I'm a big survival horror fan. Like, it's one of my favorite genres. But it feels like an old survival horror game, but not for the good reasons. Like, a lot of the puzzles are really convoluted. The thing with turning the dial is like happens so many times. You know, in like a game, you're looking for a locker combination. And that puzzle appears like once in a game. This happens like four or five times where you've got to get a three-digit number and to put on this talisman thing. It's like, mate, that's pretty boring. It's disappointing. If you see it for 15 quid or a tenner, go for it because you might like it, but certainly not full price.
It's weird to me because you don't get David Harbour and Jodie Comer for cheap. So you have to assume that they thought, we can get, like, we're not going to get Resident Evil 4 remake scores, but we're maybe going to be, like, in, like, your quarries of the world or something like that. How are they? Are they phoning it in? Are they all right?
They're okay. I mean, they're doing the best they can with the material they've got. Like, some of the dialogue is atrocious. but so it's like Harper's like believable-ish. But then, like, they're not really phoning it in, but the animations aren't amazing either. So, and the facial animations are okay. So even if they're giving their best performance, you can't really see it that well. It's not like a Marvel 1943 situation, or even like a, what's a game recently that had amazing, Suicide Squad. Nothing like that. It feels almost last gen in terms of facial animations and stuff. So you're not really getting the most out of them. Some of the supporting cast are abysmal. Like the guy who plays her uncle is like, there's a bit where he's like, he's struggling. He's like, my head. And David Harbour's like, what do you want? Do you want me to, and he suggests something like, are you suggesting that if we do this, then we can get out of this? And he looks up and goes, why would you give me hope? Why would you do that to me? Well, Jesus Christ, what's going on? It's very B movie, and like in every sense, like a B movie gameplay, B movie.
Sounds like a bale of bish, if you ask
It's okay. It was disappointing more than. I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Wait for a subscription service. Surely that'll be chucked on.
Oh yeah, if it's on Game Pass or PS Plus, definitely give it a go, because you might click with it better than I did, but it just didn't land with me, which is a shame, because it was one of the ones I was looking forward to most. Like, I've mentioned it quite regularly on the Slack, like for the months before it came out. I was like, that's my game. I'm doing Alone in the Dark. And yeah, it was a bit...
Oh, you had to really wrestle with that one. Listen, guys,
I'm sorry, but I insist. I'm putting my foot down. Stomp.
You're like, you can do seminal genre changing RPG, right? Dragon's Dogma.
You
too,
do Dragon's but... Dogma. Lay off Edward Canby. He's mine. Fun times.
Speaking of games that are just fine.
Emily Hartwood. That was really annoying me about our Sunday.
Emily Hartwood.
I think it was Hartwood. move on.
Say it definitively and then go, I'm not actually.
As soon
actually
as I said it, I had the doubts, but move on.
Rise of the Ronin is the other big release this week. I've been playing it for a couple of weeks now. You might remember I did a preview a few weeks ago, and at that point I was fairly high on it. I thought, you know what, based on the first couple hours, this is fine. It's a fairly standard open world game, but it never gets beyond a fairly standard open world game. Essentially, you are a titular Ronin, and you're going through Japan during the Bakumatsu period, which is kind of this legendary historical period with a lot of political unrest, and as such you are playing as a character who can either be pro-shogun or anti-shogun, and that dictates like the future of Japan. All that, the story stuff, really interesting, characters fun, the combat is really good, it's Team Ninja, so they do combat, but the rest of it's so fluffy, man. It's like, it's open world, it's an open world that could have been from 2015, like, there's shooting ranges, and there's crap to collect, and there's a million markers on the map, and there's crap with side missions. Like, it's just, this is Team Ninja's first open world game, and it feels like, so they've been making this for 8 years, and it really shows. It feels like they made the design doc of what an open world game was 8 years ago, and the time since, they've not really felt, or maybe they just couldn't like steer out of the open world malaise that is really set in. And this isn't Rise of the Ronin's fault, apart from that they could maybe have not released it this week, but set against Dragon's Dogma 2, which is like almost a dissertation on how good open world games could be if they weren't these hand-holdy million icons on the map things. It couldn't feel more dated if it tried. Pretty disappointed in that one. There's a few strange little wrinkles to the combat, so every mission you can do it with like AI partners and online partners, but we weren't able to do that during the review period. However, a lot of this combat is like soulsy. So your AI partner is fighting this person and you're just standing behind them, stabbing them to bits. Like, it breaks the thing. As soon as that started happening, thankfully you can turn that off and just play it as a single player game. Much better, much harder, much more enjoyable. But yes, it's an interesting step. I think they'll learn a lot from this experience, especially because they were on a really good run. I thought Neo 1 and 2 were great. Didn't love Wolong as much, but still solid. But the open world thing, man, it's just, it feels like where we were with shooters, like maybe 5 years after Modern Warfare came out, where every single game was a shooter and they were all the same. It's a bit of a disappointing one. What is your reaction? I'm conscious of the fact that for people who buy one 70 quid game every 2 months, opening a map and seeing a billion things to do is potentially a good thing. But obviously, I'm always keen to highlight the different perspective we have as people who play 50 games a year, get every game for free, essentially. It's a different kind of prospect for us. When you open a map and see a million things, regardless of how much you're enjoying the game, what's the gut feeling?
There's initial wariness. The initial gut feeling is, oh, Christ. But then I go, well, wait a minute, what? How many of these can I skip? Like, theoretically, because obviously, if you're buying a game for 70 quid and you're not likely to buy another game for like a month or so, you'll go, okay, cool. That's a lot for me to do. But even then, I would imagine if I was in that situation, I'd still be going, but is this all going to be good stuff? Or is this all, are 80% of these just little icon things I need to walk over to collect and I'm not actually doing anything? On the other hand, if I'm reviewing it, I'm going, how many of these are like towers? how many of these are annoying things that are going to take a lot of time? And how much of it is stuff that's like side quests where you do a couple to get a feel for it for the review purposes, but you're not obliged to 100% complete the game, in which case, fine, phew, this could still only be a 20-hour game for review purposes and not an 80-hour one. We definitely approach these things in a different way, which is why you often see a lot of games journalists saying, what happened to the good old days of 4 to 6 hour games? It's like, we're all desperate for them.
Why do you think we're all obsessed with Titanfall 2? Because you could beat it in like a morning.
Exactly, what a game. It's like there's value for money, but there's also filling a game with chaff.
It's a very chaffy game. It's fine. Like it's a quintessential 3-star game. Mm-hmm. If we were explaining the VGC scale based on games, quintessential 3-star, mm-hmm. It's fine. I say in the review, nothing in the game is straight up bad. It's just all kind of borderline, and the combat's is pretty good. But you're just rattling off the games that it reminds you of as you're playing it.
This is a problem this is just the way rating systems work. And when this isn't a rant about in particular, but when our score gets transferred over to Metacritic, we're entering a different rating scale there and it gets skewed. So like a 3 out of 5 for us, which by our scale is, it's good, it's okay.
Yeah.
Gets translated to 60% on Metacritic, which is basically, this game is one of the worst things imaginable as far as the internet's concerned. Anything under 70 is like a death curse, especially when you give a game a 2 out of 5 like I did with Alone in the Dark. Like 2 out of 5 is 2 out of 5 is this is disappointing, but you might get something out of it, but which translates to 40, which is like bright red on
you should be ashamed of your words and deeds.
Exactly. A 3, people if people come to a review from Metacritic, be aware that a 60 on VGC isn't actually that bad. It's not run out and buy it, but it's also, don't just ignore it if it appears on a subscription service. It's like, it's worth playing. Just maybe not for 70 quid.
Yeah, it's fine. You've got much better to play. It's a weird one because it's Team Ninja, but it's like partly funded by PlayStation Studios, and I feel like this was one that in the lead up wasn't getting the full, they weren't treating this like a Spider-Man or a God of War. They weren't giving it both BAFTAs. It was in state of plays, and you're like, oh, this could be cool. And like looking at the scores, it's your 3s and your out of 5s. It's like your 3s and your 4s, your 7 and 8s out of 10. There'll be people that'll get a lot out of it. I famously hate Days Gone, and that is like a game that has a weirdly high fan base. So if it comes to the PPP, the PlayStation Plus Premium, sure. But Also, Ghost of Tsushima does everything it does better, and it looks better, and it's on the PPP already, so...
As we record this, it's been up, what, 37 minutes? Your review's been up?
Yeah.
Have you had any abuse yet?
Oh, I've had one. I'd like to read this out, because it's an absolute cracker.
Maybe not say who said it.
I don't really care, to be honest, but... I have a reputation around these parts because I have really enjoyed Sony's recent string of games.
Oh, that reputation?
Well, one of them.
Maybe the other one.
Can't spell.
Your Honor.
I have a reputation for being a bit of a Sony fan because I've liked a lot of their games recently, and because people didn't know I wasn't a public figure in the PS3 and PS4 era when I was a big Sony fan, but a hating ass hater on the pitch they were putting out. So... This has resulted in me giving a lot of 5 stars to Sony games. I have dared, well, not all Sony games, GT7, never forget.
God rest it
in the cafe. I've dared to give Rise of the Ronin 3 stars. And while, to be fair, on the tweet from VGC, a lot of people are just like, that's a shame, not surprised, Famitsu is a joke. On my tweet, I've been responded to by someone who appears to be the quintessential Sony pony.
Here we go.
Well, Mid is part of your last name.
Oh, so that's good.
Actually, doesn't surprise me.
That's good.
Pretty good. We had to stop the recording so I could bust a gut, so I could slap my knee and howl at that patter. but no, this is not the GT7 situation where I was getting like DMs of people going off their buns at me for saying correctly that game's boring as fuck. But yeah, it's been fact. You've been getting a lot of Alone in the what is the Alone in the Dark versus Tennis Haters situation?
Amazingly, I got Alone in the Dark abuse because of your alleged Sony fanboyism. So like, I'd say the review came out like Alone in the Dark 2 out of 5 disappointing, and someone replied saying something like, oh, well, what do you expect? You always give PlayStation games a really high score. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, number one, that's not me. and number two, is it nothing to do with PlayStation? What are you talking
about? Have you ever reviewed a PlayStation exclusive for VGC?
I did, actually, and got abuse for it. Way back at the start, I did the remake of Medieval.
And really didn't
like it.
Yeah.
But got abuse for not liking that. Because how could you insult the memory of the great game Medieval? I'm like, mate, I love Medieval.
How could you talk shit about Sir Dan Fortescue?
I'm like, mate, I loved Medieval. See if you make it in PlayStation All Stars Battle Royale, then you've made it. You've made it to the big show. Fat Princess.
The big show was in that
Fat
game.
Fat Princess, God rest her. Imagine if they brought out Fat Princess now.
Isn't there ongoing Fat Princess mobile game? Let me check.
How did they get away with that?
It was a dark time. Fat Princess Fistfuls of Cake on the PSP. Good game, by the way. And the Fat Princess games were actually alright. but yeah, the Destructoid gave Fat Princess a Fistful of Cake 9 out of 10.
The PSP store's gone. We'll never know.
I know. There's absolutely no way to get old PSP games. Mm-hmm. The PlayStation has had plenty of 5 stars from VGC, okay? I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Jim Ryan's not going to come out of retirement to beat me to death over my mid-Rise of the Ronin
take. I'm literally wearing a top with a PlayStation logo on it right in this second. So chill out, folks. With an Xbox controller and a Switch behind me, so...
I have this stupid thing. I paid for this. This is the DualSense Edge. I don't use these flaps at all. I use them as like a fidget toy.
That's the same. I don't use my Elite 2 anymore. My Elite 2 thing that I've got it all customized and everything. I got when they did the design lab, I got a wee Celtic themed Elite 2. It doesn't have a share button.
Mm.
So why would you take the share button off your premium controller? That's my favorite button. Other than A, obviously, what about me? But I don't use it anymore. I use my Starfield controller because it doesn't have those flaps. Those flaps annoy me, and it's got a capture button. So stuff them.
Stuff them.
Stuff your fancy controllers, boys.
In conclusion, for Rise of the Ronin, stuff your fancy controllers. Elsewhere on the site this week, El Capitan Andy Robinson has reviewed Princess Peach Showtime.
Showtime.
I was about to say it's a tribute to the great Steve Borden, who's who's retired after a million years.
God rest his career.
God rest his career. His son. I put this in the Slack.
Which one? The kind of emo looking one or the
surfer, the guy who plays surfer the jacked guy. Yeah. He's a Destiny YouTuber. So if he wants to come on the podcast, or rather, do you want to get your dad to come on the podcast, talk about Christ or whatever, you can go ahead and do that. I think it's a not right. I maybe wouldn't want to do this because his political views are really reflective of someone who's taken a lot of abuse to the head.
Stings her. No.
He's like a Christian,
like Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, kind of. The Undertaker, though.
Mark Calloway's got some views on him, isn't he?
Yeah, but he will not stop podcasting. He is finding mics like Paul Bearer used to find caskets for him.
It's funny how
he will just say
it's funny how
anything on his mind.
It's funny how he went so long, like not saying anything. Now the boy won't shut up, and it's mate, got a fork in it.
I get it. You stay gimmicked for that long. You want to just talk shit eventually. But
the highlight of Sting's career for me on a personal level was we used to have a WCW VHS tape. I believe it was Starrcade 89 or maybe Starrcade 90. The one where Sting fights Ric Flair. And at the start, Sting appears to thank you for purchasing this home video. And he says a line that me and my brother used to absolutely piss ourselves laughing at because of the double entendre involved. And being a young child, you laugh at any kind of sexual type humour. And Sting basically thanks you for purchasing the tape and then says, I hope you enjoy watching it as much as I enjoyed doing it. And then some people go, he loves doing it. So Sting, that to me, Sting's never done, other than being rescued by Robocop in one pay-per-view, that's the two best things Sting has done.
It's Robocop! Oh. Mate, if it was Starrcade 89, then this is an absolutely incredible card. Let's run it down. Opening match, the Steiner Brothers versus Doom, which I mean, that's the one. Doom?
Well, was Farouk not one member of Doom?
Ron Simmons, and Doom number two was Franklin Reed, who went as Butch Reed. But you know who one of their managers was?
Woman.
Yeah.
Woman.
Woman.
Woman. Woman.
So this was like a tournament show because it was Lex Luger.
That's right, it was kind of King of the Ring type thing.
Yeah. Then the Road Warriors, stars of the show, were fighting, and then you had a couple of Ric Flair matches. Good shit, brother.
Joe, I also had on VHS, and I watched it so much to the extent it got worn out, and now these days it's considered an internet meme. Was the Chamber of Horrors Halloween Havoc with the electric chair in the middle of the ring.
The one that had Abdullah the Butcher in it?
I had that on VHS. I was well up on my Chamber of Horrors in the 90s, like long before it became internet folklore. What a match.
Abdullah the Butcher gave multiple people hepatitis by bleeding on them.
Good.
I think that Randy Orton's dad also did that to The Undertaker, and then when The Undertaker found out, he just went backstage and battered the life out of him and no one said anything.
Seems about right.
That's country justice.
That's what you'd expect from a redneck.
Yeah.
Bring it, Mark. Come on in the podcast and defend yourself.
Oh, before this podcast is over, we need some interaction with Mark Calloway.
Can we just get a wrestler on this podcast one day, please?
I think we could definitely get a wrestler.
If any wrestlers are listening...
I feel like we could eventually get Austin Creed. I know people that are very good pals with Austin
Creed. Mr. Austin Creed owns one of my books. I've had DM conversations with Austin Creed to send my NES encyclopedia to him, and he seemed very appreciative of it.
He's a good man.
I'm sure we could get him on. We almost had an AEW one on, didn't we, when the game came out?
We almost had the AEW one, and then
CM Punk
went sideways. CM Punk is that'll be my final episode. My guests for the final episode will be CM Punk and my wee Doug. later. Anyway, until next week, where we will be joined by a very favourite guest of mine. You know him, you love him. He is the actor.
He's one member of the Road Warriors.
Road Warrior and actor will be back to talk all things, whatever pish he's been auditioning for. And we have games that we can talk about next week, don't we, Chris? Eh?
Give them a
really good hint about what it is.
South Park.
Ah, okay. We can talk about South Park next week. Until then, questions, comments, and concerns, the podcast at videogameschronicle.com. T-shirt consideration provided by Gambit Gaming. Check them out, VGC at checkout for a discount. Follow Chris on Twitter at Scully1888. Me on Twitter at Jordan Midler. Thank you to the great Grant Kirkhope, who, when he wrote this podcast theme, I knew he would imagine it being used on a podcast that talked quite so much about 80s WCW. What you got going on for the rest of the week, Chris?
Continue to play the game I very vaguely hinted about. And then playing another game. And also a VR game. I'm being very vague here because I've not checked embargoes for other things. But
that VR game you're playing, I'm also going to moan at them to play that VR game.
Because you played it on a previous format, didn't you?
I did a dead format.
God rest it.
Atari Lynx VR.
But I'm spinning plates.
Spinning plates and shagging eights. It's VGC, the video game podcast. Until next week, say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
And we'll see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.